back, everybody, to the February 2017 edition of the Mainland Podcast. I am Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com, and we are happy to bring you our last monthly podcast of the off season, as we will swing back into our weekly series here as the month of March approaches. So this would be podcast episode, about 74, I think. And joining me, one of our mainland writers, Dave Rowe. Dave, how are you tonight?
I'm doing excellent, Michael. Glad to be back. Seems like it's been a month.
Yeah, I've been putting it off this month. We did it early last month because we got a window to get Jason Kreiss, and been putting it off this month because I've been under the weather. I'm still kind of battling a bit with the it's just a smidgen of a cough that's kind of lingering, but and a little bit of a I don't know if my voice will hold out long, so we might have to do a brief one to this this time out. But yeah, so we'll try to get this done. I you know, one of the great things about the season coming up is we have actual soccer going on, and OCB, as we record this on the 23rd, the evening of the 23rd, OCB had its first preseason friendly scrimmage, and they drew against the University of Central Florida 0-0 in their first outing. Interestingly enough, former USL Lion Rob Valentino, who's now an assistant coach with Orlando City, got out there and played a little center back with some of the trialists to bring some stability to the back line. But and he must have done a good job because, again, no goals were scored. And Orlando City has been out there on the pitch, and they've been playing some unusual scrimmages. You know, the great thing about it is that they've been scoring some goals, but the bad thing about it is they've been shipping some goals. But I don't think it's too much to worry about. Some of these have been a little bit unusual in their structure. They did three 45-minute sessions against Philadelphia Union. That's not something that you'll normally do in the course of the MLS season. They had two 90-minute sessions in one game. So, you know, they've been doing a little bit of interesting things. But the main thing they want to do is build some kind of cohesiveness and get fit for the season, which starts March 5th against New York City FC in the brand new stadium downtown. So, anyway, Dave, I know that some people, some of our readers have been a little bit, you know, put off by the goals against. Obviously, Toronto scored early and then had two late goals in the scrimmage on the weekend, and Philadelphia scored three times, but, you know, again, the third one came in the 125th minute. What are your thoughts overall on preseason and you know, what it means or what it portends for the regular season, if anything?
Preseason is just that. You're out there, you're seeing what you have, you're trying new things, you're seeing how people are going to work. I mean, we have, you know, speaking of the defense, I mean, we've got new guys on the back line. They've got to develop chemistry. That takes time. Preseason helps with that. I mean, you can do a lot in practice, but until you're actually, you know, face-to-face with somebody that you don't practice with all the time, you're not necessarily going to be able to see how that cohesiveness is going to work. So that's probably part of it. Joe Bendix has got to get used to, you know, those new guys and talking with them, directing them. So there's a lot that goes on there. And that's exactly what the preseason is for. So I don't think that it's necessarily something to worry about, at least at this point. We're going to have, because we have new people, there's going to be a little bit of growing pains, but I think we also got good people in. And so once they develop that chemistry, I think overall we're going to be better off on the back line than we were last season. And that can only be a good thing because now, that is where I think the heartburn is coming for some of our readers, is that they were burned so badly by the back line, or it seemed that way to them so much last year that they're having flashbacks, even though it's preseason. And so every little – it's one of those things, you know, when you get punched in the mouth so many times, then you start to get wary of somebody putting their fists up. So – they're just I think they're just reacting to that. I think once once things get going, it'll settle down. It'll be better. You know, on the other end, Rivas has been, you know, fantastic. And, you know, yes, he and Laren have got to figure out their, and once again, you know, we've got two up top, whereas before we've only had one up top. So now they've got to figure out that, how that's going to work and how that communication is going to go, where, who's going to be where, so that they're not in the same spot. There's a lot of that. And I think, like I said, that's exactly what the preseason is for. That is what Coach Kreis is working on. And, you know, yeah, we're going to have to wait to see, you know, how it translates into the regular season. But none of those have counted yet. So everybody's got the same record. We've got just as good a chance as anybody else. Let's stay positive.
Yeah, I've never been a big believer that preseason results were, you know, could tell you a whole lot about the regular season and how that was going to go. I know that the Chicago Cubs didn't have a winning record in their spring training games last year. And, you know, people say, well, don't dismiss what's going on because, you know, there's things that they're working on and these are the things they're supposed to be cleaning up and whatnot. But, you know, last year we were told that they were working on set pieces and, you know, Seb Hines goes out and scores four goals in a game off set pieces. And I don't think Orlando City exactly set the world on fire on set pieces last year. So I don't think you can necessarily take a whole lot out of it. I just think that right now, Jason Kreis seems pretty upbeat about the way things are going. He did mention against Toronto the first 5 minutes and last 5 minutes weren't what he wanted, but for the most part, they did what they were asked to do. And if the coach says that seems satisfied, then you got to pretty much believe that things are coming along. And, you know, I kind of predicted that Orlando City might get off to a little bit of a difficult start and then start to pick it up as the, you know, the back four get a chance to gel and build some chemistry. So that's kind of my thought on the preseason. And, you know, so many of these things have been closed to the media and to the public that we really don't have a lot of visual evidence to go on. And you know, Austin was out there at the Toronto preseason match, and he says for the most part they played fine. They just had a few mishaps that you know, they'll try to clean up and you know, we'll go forward from there. So I would say don't panic based on preseason. You know, take everything with a grain of salt. You know, many NFL teams have gone winless in preseason and gone on to do great things. And I know this isn't, you know, that kind of football, but I think that, you know, there's things you work on. There's different combinations you're going to see than what you see in the regular season. Your depth is going to be tested at some point during the season. There's a lot of different variables that the preseason doesn't really allow you to capture. So, and there's just a fact of human nature. Some guys are just more intense when the regular season happens and, you know, the games count and real results are on the line and that kind of thing. So step back from the ledge. Don't worry too much about it. There's one more preseason game to go this weekend at the new stadium against St. Louis FC. And, you know, it's a USL team. So, again, you're not going to be able to really tell a whole lot about that. The USL teams tend to play up when they play MLS sides, even if it's preseason, because they play with a little more chip on their shoulder. And I think the main thing is just to give everybody a good run out, try not to get any more players hurt, and you know, get a good experience in the stadium, in the brand new stadium. So looking forward to it. March 5th is coming sooner than you realize. You know, I don't know about you, Dave, but I feel like this off season hasn't been as long as hasn't felt as long as usual. I think maybe because we've had all the pride stuff and the national team stuff and all this stuff going on in the off season. It just hasn't felt to me to be a big, you know, gap in the schedule, even though we haven't played since October.
Yeah. Well, like you say, I mean, there's been a lot to talk about. There's been a lot to watch, you know, and of course with Jason taking over halfway through the season last season, so we had his, you know, we can talk about his first full season coming up. We can talk about the acquisitions. There's plenty to to, you know, okay, it's not a big fat steak, but at least it's a hamburger worth of stuff to talk about. And that can make all the difference between it feeling like, you know, you're in the desert, or if, you know, okay, well, you're just in Vegas.
Well, one of the things that I think that we should probably talk a little bit about is, you know, we talked a little bit about injury and depth being tested, and Kevin Alston had a knock midway through the preseason, and now Rafael Ramos with injuries to both his hamstrings. And, you know, that might push tonight's guest actually over to the right side to play right back, which he's done some this preseason. Donny Toya may be the man in line to get the start on opening day at right back, as PC, by all accounts, you know, Victor Yero, you know, codename PC, nickname PC, whatever you want to say, has impressed Jason Kreiss and company this preseason. The young Brazilian with the flair for the attack, and of course, nobody that was there will forget the U.S. Open Cup goal that he scored against Orlando City last year. What do you make of the you know, of the situation with Ramos being out for they're saying 6 weeks, which, you know, that sounds about right. Depends on the severity, obviously, but. Two hamstring injuries at one time is a little bit curious to me.
It's that comes across as a little bit nuts. It's one of those, okay, one hamstring, you're like, okay, you know, stuff. Two, just like you feel bad for the man. I mean, it's just how does that happen? I mean, you know, we're older than he is, and I haven't had a hammy. Now, I haven't run as much as he has, but still, you know. Yeah, it's disappointing. Anytime we lose any depth, that's going to be bad, you know, because it's 90 minutes, and sometimes people need a spell, especially after, you know, things get going. You know, everybody, like we were just saying, you know, they're trying to get into shape for the season. Well, having more depth early on is going to be better, so that hurts. It is nice that Toya can go over to the right side and allow us that flexibility. I think that's one of the really nice things about, and I don't even remember who wrote the article, but I believe that was mentioned, that it, you know, he did have the ability to play on either side. So that is good. That helps us out. And then PC on the others on the left side, going forward, I would still like to have the depth. And that's where injuries are going to hurt you. So that's anybody, anytime. I mean, you know, that's professional sports. So there's only so much we can do about that. And that's up to the trainers and everybody to get him back healthy, not push it, make sure that he takes the time he needs so that mm-hmm. when he does come back, you know, he's ready to go.
Yeah, it's really bizarre kind of how the, you know, when the injury bug hits, it usually hits one position and hits it hard, no matter what sport or what team you're talking about. I think back to last year's Dolphins team, and the secondary was decimated, and also the offensive line. It's like, so, you know, offensive linemen kept going down, defensive backs kept going down, and with Orlando City, they finally got some good depth at fullback, and then boom, two right backs get injured. I don't expect Alston will be out too much longer. He provides a little bit of good coverage and some experience. Certainly is a known quantity. I think some people were a little disappointed that Jason Kreiss went out and re-signed Alston and Hines and guys like that. But, you know, Jason Kreiss said last year at the end of the season, what surprised him was how close this team was to being ready, and he didn't foresee needing to make major changes. And the one, you know, one major change that he made was on the defensive end by bringing in, you know, Jonathan Spector, Donny Toya, PC, along that back line, and also bringing in Will Johnson for coverage. So, you know, he made the changes he needed to make in the areas he thought he needed to make them. You know, obviously we didn't foresee necessarily losing Molino, but the team should be able to survive that in terms of, you know, playing an extra forward, one less midfielder. You know, they've been playing a 4-4-2, and interestingly enough, not the diamond. They've been playing a bit of a flat 4-4-2, a traditional 4-4-2.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a surprise. I believe the coach said that, you know, based on the personnel that he's got right now and how he sees them playing, that's that's the best way for him to put them out there to be most effective. We all know that he would like to institute the diamond, but I think it speaks to his coaching acumen that he is able to look at it and go, okay, you know what? While I would like to do that, that's not going to work out best right now.
Well, it looks like we got some technical issues creeping in. So why don't we just get on with our interview with Donnie Toya, and we'll get to that right after this. All right, joining us on the Mainland Podcast, we're very honored to have one of the newer Lions with us this time out, Donnie Toya, left back, or fullback, I should say. He can play on the right as well. Thanks so much for being with us on the Mainland Podcast.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Donnie, before we get started in the real hard-hitting questions, I just want to say that I really didn't appreciate the goal you scored on us couple years ago in Montreal. I'm sure some of our listeners are still smarting over that one, but it's good to know you're on the good guys side now. I wanted to start off by asking you about the exit from Montreal and whether or not you knew this was coming before the protected list came out. You know, what kind of conversations did you have there, and did you realize you'd be moving on?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it wasn't – being in Montreal just wasn't the right place for me personally. I was trying to get out of there and back into the States, stateside somewhere. So it was definitely something that we were talking about, my agent and I, and it was pretty brief for the most part, but at the same time – he knew how I felt about trying to get out of there. And so he was doing everything he could. And then, I got a phone call during the off season saying that I was unprotected. So that was kind of a positive. And then after that, I knew the expansion draft was coming, but I didn't really think anything of it. I was watching it, and then I actually got a phone call at the time. So I missed the part where I actually got drafted. But it was pretty exciting. It was crazy to think that I got chosen out of that first out of that whole draft to, at the time, Atlanta, a new expansion team. And then a couple hours later, finding out that I was actually traded to Orlando. So it was definitely an exciting moment for me. I was happy about the trade, the whole situation and how it went down. And after that, I was just looking forward to coming to Florida and starting a new season here.
So when you found out about the draft and everything, did you already know that you were being moved on from Atlanta? Did they tell you that right up front?
No, I had no idea. They just told me that I was unprotected from Montreal, like on their list. Mm-hmm. And then, so that pretty much, I mean, at that point, I just knew that I had a chance of going in the expansion draft, but I had no idea about who was going to pick me up or if anybody was going to pick me up. And then it happened, and then I got a call from Carlos Bocanegra from Atlanta, and he spoke with me briefly, just saying congratulations that we picked you up. And then a couple hours later, got a phone call Jason basically saying that there was a trade that had happened prior to that, and so that's how it all worked out.
So an eventful expansion draft for you, for sure.
Absolutely.
Having played against Orlando before, what were your initial thoughts when Jason called and said, you know, you're coming to Orlando City?
I was very excited, actually. I mean, obviously playing against them the first 2 years in the league, they have a great team. All the players, they have great ability, and they showed it the few times that we played against them in Montreal and actually in Florida. The results were both ways, and especially towards the end of their season last year when they got the new coach in and they started playing for each other a little bit more, and it showed. I mean, they crushed Montreal 3-1 at home, and I was a part of that game. So it definitely shows that the character is there for all the players, and that they're willing to fight for each other, and they want to be there to win a championship.
Now you're on your fourth MLS team already. You're only 24. We can't call you a journeyman at this point because you're only 24 years old. You've done this before, this moving to a new team thing. How kind of long does it take to come into a new team, a new city, and kind of settle in with the guys? How long does that take?
I mean, it just depends on the person you are. If you're kind of outgoing and low-key about things and just let things flow, it goes pretty well. If you're willing to kind of break out of your little shell and communicate with players and coaching staff and people around you, then you should be able to break out of that and actually get to know the players fairly well and fairly quick, probably within like a couple weeks. I'd say, obviously, my luck in the couple teams that I've played for in the past and traveling and moving from one team to the other pretty much every year. It's definitely tough at times, but at the same time, you got to have that personality of being outgoing and allowing yourself to be introduced to new things and new people. So I think for myself, it's pretty easy for the most part.
So coming in here, you meet the guys, you get out on the field a few times. Who are some of the guys that kind of helped you settle in and sort of made you feel welcome right off the bat?
Will Johnson. I mean, I played with Will Johnson before. He was at Salt Lake when I was there. When I was there with him the very first year, he was one of the very first guys that came up to me and introduced himself and said, if you need anything, let me know, contact me, give me his number and everything. So I knew him, and we still had that little friendship from the past. And so he was very helpful. And then also when Josh Saunders came in, he put himself out there, and obviously he's a veteran guy in the league, and he's been very helpful as well, on and off the field and situations and stuff like that. And then Servando Carrasco has been there, and so a bunch of guys. It just depends on who you talk to and who you're willing to kind of break out of your shell with.
So you talked about Will Johnson, seeing a familiar face. Obviously, another familiar face being Jason Kreis. It was early in your career when you were with Jason in Salt Lake, but what sort of how is he to play for as a player? Like, what do you expect from a coach like Jason Kreis, and what does he bring to the table that you enjoy?
What I enjoy is that he brings out the best in you. He always wants you to give 100%, and he allows, obviously, it's okay to make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes, and you learn from them. So he's always been that kind of, I feel like, that type of a coach where if you're going to make a mistake, you learn from it, but he wants to make sure that you get it right and you progress. Obviously, coming into the league very first year with him, I was a forward midfielder and transitioned to defender. So obviously that mentality is a little bit different, but it was always just willing to put in the work and proving yourself day in, day out, and giving 100% no matter what.
So the team, you came in and you guys went into training and you went up to Jacksonville for a bit. How would you describe the team's personality and the mentality of this team and the closeness that you were able to sort of develop when you guys were away from home?
It seemed like everybody was focused. Obviously the last couple of years weren't the greatest years, and coming into the league, everybody has high expectations, and so do the players and coaching staff. So obviously not being able to make the playoffs, it's frustrating, and that's what your goal is, to make playoffs and win championships. So everybody came in super focused and ready to go and get the season started, because we want to make that run into the playoffs. We want to show people that we're here to stay and prove that to the MLS that Orlando is a team that's going to compete for every match and leave everything on the line.
So you guys have played a few friendlies here in the preseason, and I know that some of our readers have expressed some dismay at some of the results and some of the amounts of goals against. How would you, as a professional, you've been through several preseasons, how would you sort of calm the nerves of the fans who are sort of, you know, they hang on every little piece of information and see it as a sign of things to come? How would you describe the team's play and you know, certainly the defensive end of things?
Yeah, I mean, I try not to worry about what the fans say and stuff like that. I mean, that's obviously out of our hands, and it's something that we don't need to be worried about in the first place. I mean, we have our job to do, and that's whether it's defending, attacking, or just in general playing as a team out there on the field. I think for the most part, our defense is solid. We just got to fix a few little mistakes that we do here and there that cost us goals. But it's just little details that are actually really big details that we need to make sure that we fix. And after that, I think we'll be okay.
So, you know, you had this, you came in, you've been a left back. Orlando also brought in PC, this Brazilian kid to compete. Your battle for left back got a little bit derailed, I think, by the injuries at right back. With these injuries at right back, can we expect you to shift over to the right, or is that something you guys have talked about, or is that still being worked out?
Yeah, to be honest, I don't even know at this point. I mean, in training and everything, I'm playing left and right back, so it's up in the air. I mean, I'm always competing for a spot no matter what, whether it's on the left or right. So, I mean, I go in every day with the same mentality to give 100% and prove myself and prove to the coaching staff that I want to be a starting player at either position. I think for the most part, I'm capable for doing that on both sides. And I think I've proved that for the last couple of years. So I stay focused and try to focus on myself and make sure that I do everything as right as possible and just compete. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing is you're always out there to compete. I mean, it's your job that's on the line. And if you're not starting, then you're on the bench, and nobody likes to be on the bench. It's frustrating, and it's not fun.
How tough is that transition from playing left to going over and playing on the right side? Is it something where you sort of have this, you know, reaction because you've been playing on the left so much, and then maybe there's some hesitation on the right, or you know, what are the challenges that you find moving from left to right?
Yeah, I think a little bit of it, like the transition going from left to right. Obviously, I'm a left-footed player, so going to the right, it makes me use my right foot a lot more, and it makes me trust it more, even though it's, maybe the quality is not there compared to the left side. But that's a big transition, and obviously, defending-wise as well, it's complete opposite. So, just the way your body is facing, sometimes you get a little confused, or you get focused on doing it the left way on the left side, and it's wrong because you're on the opposite side. So you definitely it takes time, but at the same time, I mean, for me, I've been doing it for the last 2-3 years now, so I adjust to it pretty quickly. It's just when I get stuck on one side for a little bit and then randomly transition to the other side, that's when I have a little bit of unbalance there.
You know, as someone who's moved from attacker to defender, you know, we've seen that here with Breck Shea. They moved Breck back to left back for a while. How long did that take you to sort of get comfortable in the defensive role and to get that mentality that you know what you're supposed to do, but getting it to become automatic rather than having to think about it?
I think the defending part was always automatic. I mean, ever since I've played soccer growing up, I mean, I feel like you could ask any of my coaches growing up that whether I was midfielder or forward, I was always tracking back as far as I could to help out as much as possible. So defending-wise, that wasn't a problem at all. I feel like that came on very quick. And, at this point, it's just staying focused and knowing that defending is your number one job and then going forward after that. So just a lot of communication comes into play with your center backs and your goalie. And I mean, that's your job is defending. So that's what you have to focus on.
So you've had a little bit of time in Orlando now. Have you been to the stadium? I know you've been to the training facilities. I was just curious as to how Orlando City's facilities, you know, stack up in your experience now that you've been in a few different cities.
Yeah, it's up there. I haven't seen the stadium yet. I've only seen pictures, which obviously they look amazing. Everybody's ecstatic about the stadium coming in and be able to play in front of 25,000 fans. The training facility is nice. Obviously, it's not ideal where they want to be, but I mean, obviously, I've played in a couple other, like Chivas. We were sharing the same stadium as LA Galaxy, and they had a locker room in the same stadium as well. So, I mean, it wasn't the greatest situation, but it did its job, and I think that's what it's doing here as well. I mean, it's tough to go from Montreal because they just got a new training facility, which is, I mean, I think it was actually beautiful. I mean, they did a fantastic job on it. And then obviously to come into the locker room here where it's a little bit smaller, but I mean, it just depends the group of guys as well. I mean, you're hanging out with these guys and having a good time in the locker room, just joking around and stuff like that. So you don't really worry about the little stuff like that. You don't let that stuff get to you. So,
well, Donnie, before we let you get out of here, I have to ask, I know you've only had the one career goal and it was against the wrong team, obviously, from our perspective, but
sorry,
I'm looking ahead to your first goal in purple. Do you have a celebration, dance all lined up for that?
No, I don't really do any celebrations or anything like that. It's just whatever comes to mind at the time, which is probably not much. Probably take off sprinting or something like that because I get so excited. no celebration for me.
All right. Well, Donnie Toya, one of the newest members of Orlando City, we look forward to seeing you on the pitch here starting March 5th. And thanks again for being with us on the Mainland Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, we certainly want to thank Donnie Toya for being with us as our special guest here on episode number 74 of the Mainland Podcast. Before we get out of here, a few more things we should discuss. Some news from the Pride. Obviously, the Orlando Pride and the entire NWSL will be announcing their full schedule soon. But they did announce the openers, and Orlando Pride will open again at Portland as they did last season. That will take place on Saturday, April 15th at 3 p.m. Unfortunately, same kickoff time as Orlando City LA Galaxy. So that's the bad news. The good news is you can set up your DVR to record that one because they are going to be, our very own Pride, are going to be part of the first ever Lifetime Game of the Week national broadcast through the NWSL's new national television deal with A&E Networks. So Lifetime Game of the Week debuts on the 15th, and it will be Pride at Thorns in that game. The first game at the new downtown stadium for the Orlando Pride will be a week after that, April 22nd, against the Washington Spirit at 4 p.m., and that will be Ashlyn Harris and Ali Krieger going up against their former team, the Washington Spirit. And it's really cool that the Pride get the first ever national game on A&E Network's Lifetime channel. And also, it's good to get that road game against Portland out of the way early.
Absolutely. And let me just say, I'm not at all surprised that they decided on that to be the first Lifetime Game of the Week or whatever they're calling it. And, you know, obviously Portland, big soccer town, and Orlando, big soccer town. Pride came in last year and they had the third best attendance overall, first year in the league. So they know that they're going to draw the eyeballs, and it's all about that when you're putting it on television. So I think it's a little feather in the cap for the Pride. Nice for us, like you said, put it on the DVR, be able to watch it. You're going to have a very professional level match coverage, and it's going to be really cool to be able to see that. And, you know, or you flip back and forth, who knows?
Yeah, if you don't have your ticket, which, by the way, the Orlando City home opener is sold out, as well as the Galaxy game is sold out of individual game tickets. You can still get a ticket to the LA Galaxy game if you buy the Flex 5-pack or the 5-pack Flex pack or whatever the heck they're calling it. There are still a few tickets available to that game if you go and buy the Flex pack. But individual game tickets for the Galaxy and for the home opener are sold out. It's no surprise. It's a 25,500-seat stadium, and the team has drawn 60,000-plus the first two home openers. So it's not a surprise that it sold out very, very quickly, very shortly after the tickets went on sale to the general public, considering the fact that there's 18,000 season ticket holders, and they got the first dibs on buying additional tickets to that game. And also Lion Nation folks who are not season ticket members also were able to buy tickets to the home opener before they went on sale to the general public. So really not a surprise, and it's good to see it sell out. I know that some people were disappointed to get shut out, but come on, we knew 2.5 years ago this day was coming, when the tickets were going to be squeezed down to a smaller amount, and you know, you had time to make plans and take care of that, whether it be through Lion Nation, whether it be through season tickets or whatever. You know, hopefully people aren't too upset about it, because it is just going to be part of life as an Orlando City fan. You're not going to be able to get into every game unless you buy very early, because it's going to be a hot ticket, especially with this new stadium. So, yeah. So if you're going to the stadium on the 15th, tape the Pride game, and go home and watch it afterwards. And, you know, if you're watching back, you know, if you're watching at home, maybe you can do the picture in picture thing or something, and see them both. By the way, Dave, very interesting news since our last broadcast is that classic USL era Orlando City goalkeeper Miguel Gallardo is going to be part of the local broadcast.
Really?
Absolutely.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So Miggy is back. He's been playing in Jacksonville the last couple seasons. He's going to be part of Orlando City's broadcast crew, which is very exciting to have Miguel back. And we're going to have him on the podcast, I think.
That's a fantastic idea. Just, you know, bring him back home.
That's right. So welcome home, Miggy, and we're glad to have you. Also with the Pride, we know that you know, some of our Pride players, Alex Morgan, who obviously will be with Olympic Lyonnais for the first part of the season, also Ashlyn Harris and Allie Krieger, they will all be participating in the upcoming She Believes Cup in the Northeast Corridor. That's where they're holding those games this year, which is kind of weird to have it in the Northeast in late March, I think, when that kicks off. So the weather might not behave, but they're gonna be playing against Germany and France and England again. So some very quality women's soccer for those three Pride players to get in shape. Obviously Morgan already in form, or at least in shape with Lyon. She has not had a very good goal scoring record since joining Lyon, so hopefully she'll hit her peak right in time to rejoin her NWSL team. And also some Australians, Steph Catley and Kennedy, couple of defenders, Alana Kennedy and Steph Catley will be with Australia for the Algarve Cup. So some high quality women's international soccer coming up, in advance of the NWSL season. I believe, I want to say March 13th is when camp opens for the NWSL, so the NWSL season's coming up. They're going to be training soon. Some of the players are already in Orlando and working out and getting into shape and getting ready for the upcoming 2017 season. So we're all looking forward to that.
Absolutely, and like you were saying, a lot of quality international. As far as the She Believes Cup, you know, and the weather not helping out, you know what? I don't think it's going to matter. The U.S. Women's National Team, the fans will travel to see them anywhere, anytime, any weather. They're kind of like the post office when it comes to that. So I don't think they're going to have any trouble filling the seats on that one.
And this is a big season for Ashlyn Harris because, you know, that goalkeeping competition is wide open right now. With Alyssa Nair as the other, you know, strong contender for the goalkeeping spot for the U.S. Women's National Team for Jill Ellis. And so Ashlyn Harris needs to have a very, very strong season if she wants to sort of inherit the Hope Solo mantle, if you will. Excuse me, I think my voice is starting to falter, so it's good. We're almost done. One last thing I guess we want to talk about, obviously, OCB is we mentioned them. They've gotten their preseason underway. They've now gotten a friendly under their belt against UCF, a 0-0 draw. You know, the last thing we really wanted to bring up in this February edition of the podcast is, you know, Tommy Redding with the U-20 national team. They got off to a tough start in Costa Rica with the opener of the CONCACAF Championship falling to Panama 1-0. Bounced back nicely against Haiti, and if they just take their chances against St. Kitts Nevis in the third game, they should be in pretty good shape to qualify for the U-20 World Cup, and that would be really huge for Tommy's development.
Absolutely, and he's been playing well with them. He played the full 90 with Haiti. He's been a vocal leader. Hate to put it this way, but one of the older guys, and you know, to the point where he's actually talking about helping some of the younger guys develop. Of course, Brooks Lennon has been, you know, fantastic for them as well. So it's like you said, you know, St. Kitts and Nevis, if just take care of business and they'll be good. But I've been very happy with how Redding's been playing. I think Coach Ramos made a good selection in bringing him in, and I'm very hopeful that it's going to help Tommy with, you know, Orlando City.
Yeah, pretty good outing against Panama for the most part. I mean, the team did give up a goal and lost 1-0. They also Panama actually was down a man a lot of that game, but the goal that was scored deflected in off of a defender, not Tommy Redding, thankfully, but
right.
You know, was a little bit of a fluke goal. So that could have been a result there, and unfortunately it wasn't. But no issues with Todd Ramos's team selection. I don't think that he's a particularly great tournament coach, but so far they're in a position where they can succeed in advance if they take care of business. So you know, we'll have to see if they can, you know, get that done and qualify for the U-20 World Cup, which, again, that would be, I think, a really big developmental step for Tom Redding to play, you know, on the world stage against the best players at, you know, his age level. I think that would be you know, obviously, should everybody stay healthy, he shouldn't be getting a lot of games early in the season with Orlando City, so it might be a good opportunity for him to get not only experience, but to get in form in case he is, you know, called into or pressed into service, you know, in the second half of the season, if something should happen to Spectre and Aja, and obviously there's Seb Hines waiting in the wings as well as a reserve player, a little bit of depth at center back. And I know that people like to joke about Seb and make fun of him and blame him for a lot of things, but, you know, a back line is more than one or two guys. And obviously there's some extenuating circumstances. If you're playing with a bad knee on turf, you're not going to probably play quite as well as, you know, maybe if you get a chance to, you know, to have that thing calm down a little bit, maybe keep it from flaring up. I mean, you just really don't know, because Seb would never blame it on his knee, but you just don't know how healthy that knee was last year. Certainly somebody like him who, you know, a lot of his game is predicated on playing well in the air. When he's not playing well, you know, you can sometimes, and he's getting beat on aerials, then you can sometimes look at that and say, you know, maybe he's just not getting the explosion that he needs to. And it'll be interesting to see how he bounces back this year, because obviously, if if Jason Christ didn't like him as a player, he wouldn't be on this roster.
That's absolutely true. He would not be there. Coaches, as you know, made no bones about it. He knows what he wants going forward, and if you're not going to fit in that mold or that scheme, then you know he'll make a change. So I agree with you. You know, calm down about Seb, and hopefully the knee's feeling better. And then, you know, as far as Tommy, you know, he may not break into it, but then we get back to him being able to play with the under-20s, and hopefully, you know, for them to qualify, playing time helps. Playing time helps pretty much everything. So if there is a need for him, then if they've been doing that, it's only going to help.
Yeah, you want him to be ready if he's needed. And you know, clearly the team can you know, loan him down to Orlando City B for some games and get him some playing time that way. And then if he's got that trip to play in the U-20 World Cup, that'll also help his form and his fitness and get him match ready if they need him. And certainly he's a guy who's heavily counted upon, you know, in the future plans for this team. This is a kid who, you know, he could be the center back of this team for 10 years, you know, as a starter. So, and those are really the building blocks for great teams. I mean, you look at, you look at the past of a guy like Nat Borchers who stayed mm-hmm. with, you know, who was a mainstay, you know, on a back line and that kind of thing. So,
yep.
You know, it can only help. So we want those U-20 guys to qualify. So it starts on Friday. Actually, that's the day that this podcast is going to land. So later this afternoon, hopefully at 5:30, hopefully the U-20 team will take care of St. Kitts Nevis and move up in the group. So before we get out of here, a couple big dates coming up. Of course, Saturday, the 25th of February, you've got Orlando City against St. Louis FC, the first real game in the new stadium. Of course, there's kids versus pros before that, but I'm not going to really count that as a real game. Something just tells me nobody's really going to be going full speed 100% for the guys in purple in the kids versus pro game.
I think the kids will go 100%.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Christian Aguita, of course, is banged up, so he won't be out there slide tackling any 8-year-olds. So it's probably a good thing.
Somebody needs to Photoshop that.
Yeah. The 28th is OCB. We'll be playing Oklahoma City at the IMG Academy in Bradenton, and that is going to be a game that features the video assistant replay, the VAR system. So that's kind of cool. And I've heard that might be streamed, but I don't have any confirmation of that. Of course, March 1st, we have the She Believes Cup kicking off, U.S. Women's National Team against Germany. And then again, March 4th, they will play England. And also the OCB folks will go over to Eastern Florida State College to take on San Antonio FC in a friendly, preseason friendly. And then the next day is the 5th. And in addition to Orlando City's opening game at 5 o'clock against New York City FC, OCB at 11 a.m. will be at UCF for another friendly. So maybe it's one of those things where you can take in the OCB friendly over at UCF and then hurry on over to the stadium for a few cocktails at the tailgate before Orlando City and New York City FC kickoff. And then the 7th, the She Believes Cup wraps up with the U.S. Women's National Team taking on France. So lots of soccer, real, actual competitive soccer coming up. Very exciting. The OCB regular season will kick off, on the 25th of March with Orlando City B taking on Tampa Bay Rowdies in the I-4 Derby as that resumes. That's over at Al Lang Stadium in St. Petersburg. I imagine a few of the Ruckus and ILF folks might have to go over for that one, I think. And of course,
I would think so.
And of course, before we get out of the month of March, which, you know, is practically upon us, we will have more World Cup qualifying for the U.S. men's national team against Honduras and Panama. So big moments coming up, you know, both nationally and locally. And Orlando City B on March 30th will play their first game in the new stadium against former Orlando City affiliate Louisville City FC.
All I can say is finally.
So we're going to have a lot. You and I are going to have a lot to talk about when we resume this show weekly in the month of March. So I hope.
Yes, we are. So you need to do whatever you got to do to get that throat better.
Yeah. I'm going to need a lot of Ricola lozenges and a little bit of healing and maybe some beer. Maybe that'll help.
There's always beer.
Absolutely. And no one would know that more than you.
Okay. That's true. We all have our.
Yeah. As our purveyor of Pride Pub, you would know more than most about the beer experience.
And we can look forward to the return of the pub here soon. So everybody keep a lookout for that.
All right. So Dave will tell you how to tailgate for all of these games upcoming. So, or at least the Orlando City ones. We'll have to do some special edition ones for maybe the Pride or something.
I think we will. That's a great idea. I will sit down and figure out I'll think of something.
Yeah, because I mean they're going to be playing some teams that don't have a corresponding MLS team, like North Carolina, for example.
Right. Yeah. So that offers some opportunities. You're right.
Yeah. All right, guys. So I guess that's going to do it for episode number 74. Of the Mainland Podcast. We want to thank again Donnie Toya of Orlando City Soccer Club for being with us, being a great sport, answering all of our questions, and taking a little ribbing from me about the lone goal in his MLS career, which came at our expense in 2015 when he was with Montreal on a corner kick, as I recall. So, thanks to Donnie, and of course thanks to Rafa Cabrera from the Orlando City staff for setting that up for us. Really appreciate that. And I talked to Jackie Maynard and Jackie Ramos, the two Jackies, over at Orlando City today as well. And we can look forward to more great guests being lined up in the coming weeks. So and in addition to trying to get Miguel Gallardo, we've got an in with some other great guests coming up. So you don't miss an episode, because you're going to miss an interesting interview, most likely.
Not to mention us. I mean, come on.
That's true. You if you can put up with us long enough, you can hear what you really came for, and that's not nothing.
No, it's not nothing, and we do appreciate the sacrifice everybody makes, to get to the good stuff. So
that's right. So thank you for listening. Please visit us at themainland.com. Maine like a lion's mane, MANE. Follow us on Twitter, please, at themainland. And we also have a Facebook page, The Mainland, over at Facebook.com or on your Facebook app. So also would be really awesome if you like what you hear to please give us a favorable review on iTunes. And thanks for downloading. Thanks for listening. And on behalf of David Rowe, that will do it for episode number 74 of The Mainland Podcast. I'm Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of The Mainland, signing off as I usually do by saying, Go City!